You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't pass on the Savage Lovecast.
Here again are the three tweets from @RealDonaldTrump. After consultation with my generals and military experts, please be advised that the United States government will not accept or allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail. Thank you. That blew up the internet. That made the news. We're recording the opening for today's show earlier than we usually do, 5 days earlier. So the day after Trump attacked transgender people serving in the military, and things are moving fast. So today's opening may be out of date or even moot by Tuesday, because this could go nowhere. There's been a lot of pushback against Trump's proposed ban on trans people serving openly in the military, and pushback from some unexpected quarters. Senator John McCain condemned it, but also batshit crazy right-wing anti-queer lunatic Senator Joni Ernst condemned Trump's proposed ban on transgender people serving openly in the military. And to be clear, executing Trump's orders or his tweet storm, it would require the military to expel trans people who are already serving openly, which they've been able to do for more than a year now, which Trump doesn't seem to be aware of. And if trans people serving openly is disruptive and they're already serving openly, where's the disruption? Where are the examples? Where are the news stories? They don't exist, because trans people serving openly in the military, just like lesbian, gay, and bi people serving openly in the military, which they've been doing for a few years now, is a big fat nothing burger, not a disruption. As for the expense, the tremendous medical expense of transgender people being in the military, as Parker Malloy pointed out, within seconds of Trump's tweets going out, the military estimates that it will spend roughly $8 million-ish on medical care per year for trans troops. The military, that same military, currently spends nearly $100 million on Viagra and other boner pills per year. So yeah, if you want to save money, it's dudes with erectile dysfunction that you should be banning from serving openly in the military, not trans troops. Okay, again, by the time this goes out, Trump may not even be pushing this policy anymore, and I apologize in advance if that's the case, because military leaders don't want it. The generals that Trump says he consulted with before making this announcement, the generals at the Pentagon, they say they didn't hear about this until they saw the tweets. So it appears that Trump is consulting with imaginary generals and not actual generals, which is scary to think about. Even scarier, actually, the scariest part of all of this, bigotry and discrimination are the worst parts, but this is the scariest part. During the 9 minutes that elapsed between Trump's first tweet and his second tweet, the first tweet that went, after consultation with my generals and military experts, please be advised the United States government will no longer accept or allow The generals over at the Pentagon thought Trump might be about to announce an attack on North Korea. At the Pentagon, the first of the three tweets raised fears that the president was getting ready to announce strikes on North Korea, BuzzFeed reported. Only after the second tweet did military officials receive the news that the president was announcing a personnel change on Twitter. You know what's even scarier than the 9 minutes the Pentagon thought the president might be announcing an attack on North Korea on Twitter? The 9 minutes the North Koreans spent thinking the same thing, that they were about to be attacked, which might have prompted them to lob a nuclear missile or two at the west coast of the United States while they still had time, or reduce South Korea's capital to rubble, which they could do in 10 minutes. If you're wondering why Trump made this particular announcement, and everyone is, and why now, and why out of the blue, and why without consulting his fucking generals, why launch this attack on the LGBT community and trans troops already serving, why at this particular moment? Rachel Maddow had the answer. Take it away, Rachel.
If Trump has to chew up and spit out Jeff Sessions in order to get at Mueller, well, the far-right social conservative edge of his base is gonna hate that, because they love Jeff Sessions, right? And so how do you solve that problem? where you really need to get rid of Jeff Sessions if you want to get at shutting down the Russia investigation. But your far-right social conservative base really loves Jeff Sessions. After enjoying facile, vapid beltway reporting during the campaign that suggested that maybe he'd be awesome on LGBT issues, President Today announced on Twitter, but apparently didn't technically issue an order and didn't warn the Pentagon ahead of time. But he nevertheless proclaimed on Twitter that he is now banning transgender troops from serving in the armed services. There are thousands of transgender troops serving openly in the armed services already. Honestly, it is not at all clear to me that the president knew that when he made these announcements this morning on Twitter. It's also not clear that the Pentagon is going to do what he said on Twitter. Because nobody understands what he's talking about, what the rationale is for this change, or even what the change should be. So it makes no sense. It is designed to hurt currently serving active duty service members and the military itself. But the president appears to be betting that if, in his ongoing wave of panic, he feels like he needs to oust his hardline conservative attorney general without his hardline conservative base being too mad at him about it, the president appears to be calculating that maybe this kind of a wild punch will make them happy no matter what other damage it does to the country. That appears to be the calculation here, that no matter what damage this does, maybe it will make the kind of people who are mad at him about Jeff Sessions not so mad at him about Jeff Sessions anymore. That is our best guess at what he has calculated here.
Also yesterday, Trump's Justice Department, Jeffy Sessions' Justice Department, went to court and argued that current federal law doesn't protect LGBT Americans from workplace discrimination, reversing an Obama-era interpretation of anti-discrimination laws. So all in all, LGBT Americans had a really bad week last week, courtesy of Donald Trump. And an aside to the small handful of gay male Trump supporters out there who argued that Trump would be better on LGBT issues than Clinton, we're all out here wondering how you get dicks in your asses with your heads up there already. All right, last word goes to Ross Douthat, the Catholic conservative anti-choice columnist at the New York Times, who likes to lecture Pope Francis on the subject of Catholicism. I'm not sure how I feel about quoting Douthat at the end of my opening this week. A little squicky, to be honest. Feel a little squicky about it, but I'm pretty sure Douthat feels just as squicky having a quote of his read on my show to have his words in my mouth. Probably makes him pretty uncomfortable. So it's a wash. Trump's behavior in the White House, Douthat wrote last week, is no different from the behavior he manifested consistently while winning enough votes to take the presidency. But he is nonetheless clearly impaired, gravely deficient somewhere at the intersection of reason and judgment and conscience and self-control. Pointing this out is wearying and repetitive, but it still must be pointed out. This president should not be the president, and the sooner he is not, the better. All right, coming up on today's show, lots of your Q's, tons of my A's, and on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast, which you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, the Magnum edition twice as long and no ads. Go subscribe to it. Molina Williams joins us this week at the Magnum to talk about subspace and subdrop and whether that's bullshit or not or a real thing and how to work with or around it. That's on the Magnum, plenty on the micro. Glad you're here to listen. This episode is brought to you by Blinkist. Over 2,000 of the best-selling nonfiction books transformed into powerful packs you can read or listen to in just 15 minutes. Go to Blinkist.com/savage to start your free trial today. Today's episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by 5-4 Club, fashionable men's clothing curated and sent right to your door. Get 50% off your first package at 5-4 Club when you use the offer code SAVAGE. Just go to 5-4 Club, spell it out, FiveFourClub.com, and use the offer code SAVAGE. Today's episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron delivers all fresh, high-quality ingredients and recipes you need to create delicious home-cooked meals. Get your first three meals for free by going to blueapron.com/savage.
Hi, Dan, 26-year-old here. My question starts about a year and a half ago. I started seeing this girl. Saw her for about a month. I had got a big crush on her, but things didn't work out. She decided to date someone else. You know, I was upset, but I got over it pretty quickly. Flash forward to about 2 months ago, and she hits me up again and says she's single again and wants to see me. I said, great. We met up at a bar. We really hit it off again. And she told me that she regretted not dating me back a year and a half ago. She really regretted it. she regretted choosing someone else, which was a sweet thing to say. I really wasn't expecting it at all. Anyway, we went out for a couple months, and this time I really fell for her. We have a great connection, great chemistry. We really get along well. I love spending time with her, and I was really trying to push it into, you know, a more serious relationship. I thought that's where it was headed until she dumped me. Well, broke up with me. And she said that this person who she dated instead of me way back when was this asshole who abused her physically and emotionally, and that she isn't healed from that yet and isn't ready to be in any relationship, which I told her, you know, I totally understood that, and I really feel for her, and that, you know, if she's not ready to be in a relationship, she shouldn't be, and if I'm a hindrance, then I shouldn't be around. But and she told me that, you know, if she was ready to date me in a few months, that she would reach out to me again. I'm not handling it well. I'm you know, I'm really upset about it. I'm upset for her that she's dated this piece of shit. I guess for me personally, I was, you know, I've just really spent my 20s in these kind of short-term relationships that are fun, but, you know, not emotionally fulfilling, really. I was, felt this connection with this girl, and I thought it was going to go somewhere serious, and I was just so ready to commit myself to her, and she's, you know, she can't, which I respect. I guess I'm just sort of at a loss for what to do going forward. I'm not interested in seeing anyone else, and it's hard for me to move on when she tells me that, you know, it's, she didn't break up with me because of anything I did, and because that I'm wonderful. It's just, she needs to heal. And if you told me that she would reach out to me in 6 months, if I had to wait 6 months, I totally would. But, you know, I know that that might never happen. So, yeah, I'm keeping my distance from her because that's what she wants. But I miss her. So, yeah, I'm just kind of at a loss for what to do moving forward. And also very sad.
She dated you, then she dumped you to date another guy, then she called you back and wanted to date you again and did date you for a while, and then she dumped you because she's not ready to be in a relationship because she hasn't recovered from the abuse that she suffered at the hands of some asshole. All of that could be true, but here is my maybe uncharitable analysis of it. It could also fucking be a lie. I'm not over this person that I was in a shitty relationship with, and the relationship could have been shitty and abusive, but I'm not over this shitty relationship and this what I suffered, and I have to work on myself, so I can't be with you right now. Unfortunately, that can be kind of a toxic version of it's not you, it's me, the sorts of things that people say to be kind, to absolve the person that they're dumping of any responsibility for the dumping that you're doing to them. It's not you, it's me is a polite way to let someone down easy. It's considerate to a fault of someone else's feelings. You don't want to sit there and say, here are the reasons I'm dumping you, X, Y, and Z. You do this, you do that, you are this, you are that. I find this disgusting. I hate the way you smell or taste or whatever. People don't, on the way out, need a list of all the reasons you don't want to see them, but they want a reason, they want an answer. And so people construct reasons and answers, which usually put the person doing the dumping in the victim seat. I'm can't date you right now because I'm too traumatized from this past relationship, or I'm too busy at work and school, or my mom has cancer and I'm too crushed by family responsibilities right now, or whatever it is. They lay out a reason that makes them seem a little heroic or gives them the mantle of victimhood, the unassailable mantle of victimhood. And they lay out a reason that lets you off the hook. It's not you, nothing about you. And it's our job, I like to say, when we are given and it's not you, it's me dumping, to know or tell ourselves that it really is us. She's dated you twice, and both times she has decided that you are, for whatever reason, and her reason could be exactly as stated, but for whatever reason, you're not someone that she can be with right now. And you have to act like she's telling you the truth. You have to see the pattern here of her coming back to you and then letting you go for whatever reason, and get on with your life. You have to feel your feelings. You can have a colossal sad. She's someone that maybe you could have seen yourself with, but you need to get out there and date other women. The only antidote to this kind of, well, it's not really a poison, but the antidote here is ingesting someone else's spit for a while. That'll help you get past her. And you say you're ready for more, and you say you felt this connection with her. Don't make the mistake of thinking that that connection you felt was something that she brought out of you or she put into you and then you reflected back at her. You made that connection because you're capable of making that connection. That feeling, that impulse to connect, that came from inside you. That wasn't something she did. It wasn't something that she uniquely elicited from you. That is something that you are capable of and can feel and do with and for another woman. You just have to get out there and meet other women once you've had your big sad about it not working out and never working out with this woman. Folks, when you let someone go, the problem with it's not you, it's me, my mom has breast cancer, I'm so busy at work right now, my class load is crushing me, or I'm not over something in my past that I need to get work through and get past before I'm fit to date anyone, it's the person that you're dumping may then go, I'm just going to wait it out. You're going to graduate in 18 months. Your mother's going to get better. Your mother's going to die. You're going to go get therapy and get help with this. So I am going to sit here and wait that out. And someone that you may never want to see again could be out there pining for you, biding their time, counting the days until you've graduated or mom gets better or your workload lessens or your therapy kicks into gear. If you're really not interested in someone, if you're doing the dumping and you're not interested in getting back together with them ever again, you have to make that clear. You have to dump them with some finality. You have to err on the side of not giving someone false hopes about a future with you that is not possible. And when you've been dumped, even if a future is possible, you have to act like it's not possible. You have to get the fuck on with your life, caller. So, have some ice cream, get drunk, talk to your friends, blah, blah, blah about how sad you are about this. Wallow for a month in the colossal heartache and heartbreak of it all, and then resolve to shut your fucking mouth, get out of the house, go do things, go do other people, go meet other women, and put enough women in front of you that you might be able to date or might be able to see you with, and that connection you felt, that feeling, that impulse to go for a deeper intimacy with someone, someone will come along who draws that out of you in the same way that this woman drew that out of you, that thing that was in you to begin with. She didn't put it there. It was there. It still is there. You just need a new girlfriend.
Hi, Dan. I have a question not exactly about sex or dating, but about parenting or dating a parent. I guess I'm really wondering, at what point do you call Child Protective Services on your boyfriend and his child's mother? The guy I've been dating, we've been seeing each other about 3 or 4 months. I'm a professional nanny. I've worked in childcare. I've been a mandated reporter before, and now I'm dating a guy who he and the mother of this child cannot seem to get their shit together. They have a 3-year-old. They are no longer together, my boyfriend and this kid's mom, but they still live together and co-parent. The apartment where they are raising their kid is deplorable. It is a hoarder kind of hellscape. It is dirty and smells. There's no room for this girl to play or run around or do much of anything. And I have talked to my boyfriend about this extensively, how this is a problem and what is he doing to fix it. And there seems to be a lot of passing the buck about, well, the mom doesn't work, this is her responsibility. Or he says, oh, I've talked to, you know, the mom about this, but she doesn't do anything about it. At what point do I say enough is enough and report them to some kind of authority? I'm starting to worry about the safety and well-being of this kid. I'm not in her life on a day-to-day basis, but I see her, you know, once a week, a couple times a week. This is really, I'm heartsick over this. I don't know what to do.
Call CPS, Child Protective Services in your area. Call them now. Don't wait till after the fire. Don't wait till after a pile of crap in the hoarder apartment tumbles over and crushes this kid, this 3-year-old kid. Don't wait till that kid gets tetanus. Or call now. You can call CPS anonymously. You don't have to give them your name. You don't have to let them know you're reporting your boyfriend. But you do have to, and I'm sure you feel obligated to, as someone who formerly was a mandated reporter, you have to phone this in. You do have to alert the authorities to the danger that this child is in. Your affections for your boyfriend of just a few months notwithstanding, you have to act in the best interests of this vulnerable, helpless child. And I think you should push back hard when you're with your boyfriend. You have to tell him you called CPS, but when the shit hits the fan, when CPS shows up, you need to push back hard against your boyfriend's argument that it's the wife's responsibility solely to clean up the house because he works and she doesn't. Obviously, the wife has, if she is a hoarder and this place is as filthy and disgusting and crowded as you say, the wife has some mental illness. And if he isn't then stepping up to protect his child, which would include getting her the fuck out of there, he's failing as a parent himself. She's failing as a parent, and maybe her failure is tied to a mental illness that she has no control over and needs help addressing. But if he isn't suffering from a mental illness and he's just allowing this to go on, choosing the path of least resistance, he may arguably be a worse parent than this kid's mother is. You've got to call CPS. He's got to step up the fuck up. And after you call CPS and after you tell him to step the fuck up, you need to ask yourself why you're dating this guy. It's only been a few months. If I was dating someone and I saw them actively or passively endangering a child, I wouldn't feel safe being that person's romantic partner. There are times in your life when you're with someone where you are vulnerable to them, where you're going to be sick or you're going to be in danger of some sort, and you're going to need your partner to step up and care for you and be responsible for your physical and emotional safety and well-being. And someone who is failing a three-year-old child in the way that this guy is failing this three-year-old child is not someone who's going to come through for his future wife or girlfriend. He's already failing his ex-wife, if indeed she's his ex yet. So you need to ask yourself after you make that call, after you have words with him, why you're in this relationship, whether you want to stay in this relationship, and what conditions you're going to impose on him for you to stay in this relationship, if that's the choice you make. What can you do in 15 minutes? Waste time on Facebook or online shop for something you don't need, or check out some more Tumblr porn. Or instead, you can get a summary of a book's main points, books that you've been meaning to read, books that people are talking about and you would like to be able to talk about too, by listening to the key insights in those books in just 15 minutes. Introducing the Blinkist app. Over 2,000 of the best-selling nonfiction books transformed into powerful packs you can read or listen to in just 15 minutes. With Blinkist, now you can feast your mind on the key ideas from the top best-selling nonfiction books out there, like Emotional Intelligence, The 4-Hour Workweek, and Thinking Fast and Slow. If you're just reading, you'll get through maybe one book a week, but with the Blinkist app, you can get the key insights from 2 to 3 books on your way home. Blinkist gives you more knowledge in less time. Learn the essential ideas from the best books in your field, covering topics like productivity, business science, and self-improvement. Plus, you can uncover subjects you never knew you loved. Their team of experts is constantly curating and adding new titles from best-of lists, so you know you're always getting the most powerful ideas distilled so that you can hear them in just 15 minutes or less in a made-for-mobile format. Blinkist will help you be your best by getting better informed in less time than you ever imagined possible. And right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/savage right now to start your free trial or get 3 months off your yearly plan when you join today. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/savage to start your free trial or get 3 months off your yearly plan. Blinkist.com/savage.
Hey, Dan. I've noticed lately that the acronym has gotten much longer coming out of your mouth the last few weeks, LGBTQ, blah, 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 blah. Long parade of letters there. And I've noticed this online for a while now, too. And I'm not sure if you mean it sarcastically or not, but it kind of begs the question in my mind if it's not time for a new term, a simple one-word term that's all-inclusive, that describes everybody who's not, what, straight, cis, male, gender binary, Yeah, I am fully down with inclusion. Absolutely. Let's include everybody. But it just seems like a 17-letter acronym is getting kind of tedious, isn't it? So I don't know. Maybe time for some suggestions from your listeners, or has someone already come up with a new term and we just aren't using it yet? Because, yeah, it just seems a little absurd, doesn't it?
Am I being sarcastic when I rattle off LGBTQAI2SNBLFQ again, I again, A again? No, no, of course not. I'm not being sarcastic at all. I'm just trying to be inclusive. But this term that you seek, it's already out there. It's actually in the acronym. It's one of the two Qs in LGBTQIAATSNBLFQIA. It's one of the Qs, queer. Queer. Queer is everybody who's not straight. And queer, I like to say, is genus and something else is species. You are homo sapien, genus, species. Genus, homo, species, sapien. Genus, queer. In my case, species, gay. I am queer, gay. Queer tells you a big broad thing, but not a specific thing. Gay or bi or trans or whatever else, it tells you a little bit more specifically what kind of queer you are. So the word you seek, the term you want, not only already exists, but it's already embedded in the acronym that annoys you so much. Terry, my husband, he is the clothes horse in our family. And I don't like to go shopping for clothes, and I am not good at choosing clothes that look good on me. That's what Terry is for. Terry does that, amongst other things. So you can imagine my delight and his when we heard about 5-4 Club. Each month, they send you a curated box of 2 to 3 items handpicked to match the current season and your style. They've been helping men with fashion for over 15 years and shipped to over 100,000 men every month. So if you are like me, fashion challenged, and you do not have a Terry in your life, 5-4 Club is for you. They know what they're doing. So if you don't, like me, I don't, that's okay. 5-4 Club will help you build your wardrobe 1 month at a time. And having nice looking clothes helps you feel confident. And feeling confident in your pants is going to help you get into other people's pants. When you use 5-4 Club, you get $120 worth of clothes for just $60 a month. And you can pause or cancel at any time. No commitments. And as a 5-4 Club member, you'll also receive up to 50% off items in their online shop and access to exclusive members-only items, free shipping, and size exchanges. Go to 54club.com right now and enter promo code SAVAGE, and they'll give you 50% off your first month's package plus a free pair of sunglasses. That's 50% off your first package at 5-4 Club, spelled FIVEFOURCLUB.com, promo code SAVAGE. 54club.com. Promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. Long-time listeners, love the show. Question for you. So my loving, kind, and supportive partner is a voyeur. He specifically enjoys watching unsuspecting people change in lockers and changing rooms. He's floated the idea of me taking videos to help him scratch this itch. I'm not comfortable doing this for two reasons. One, it's illegal. And two, I believe it victimizes innocent people, which I understand is part of the rush. This is really his only kink. Is there any legal way I can help him satisfy this need?
All right. To address your question quickly and to put aside, no, don't do this for your loving, kind, supportive creep of a boyfriend. What he's doing, what he's asking you to do, is not okay. The world provides us with plenty of opportunities to see hot people out in the world, moving through it. As we live our lives, and it is perfectly okay to check people out so long as you don't unnerve people and make them uncomfortable and come across as a salacious creeper, making them feel threatened, you know, follow them. But what your boyfriend is into, what he's asking you to do, is to spy on people, to carry video cameras, presumably into locker rooms that he does not have access to, and surreptitiously take videotapes of people when they have a reasonable expectation of privacy, that they're not being fucking videotaped. That is a crime. And that he's asking you to commit a crime for his dick is a bad sign, is kind of the reddest of red fucking flags. It's the May Day parade and Bay fucking Jing of red flags. And I would, if I were you, dump this motherfucker before he asked you to do anything else that's crazy, or before he got arrested himself for doing something crazy and something that invades someone else's privacy and something that is unfair to them. I have never been creeped on in this way. I have never been the victim of a peeping Tom. No one's ever surreptitiously tried to take my pictures in a locker room, but it has happened to Nancy Hartooni and the producer of the podcast.
Happened to me.
Happened to you.
I'm here. Hi, everybody.
Welcome. I always love it when you jump on a microphone when you've got something to say instead of just yelling at me when the mics are off.
Yeah. When I was in college, I caught a peeping Tom watching me, and it was really upsetting. I mean, I could see how being a peeping Tom, you would think that it's something of a victimless crime, especially if you don't get caught. But if you do get caught, that was really upsetting to me, and I didn't feel safe in my own goddamn home, and I had to, you know, block my windows. Who wants to shut off a window?
Right.
So yeah, it's not cool.
And you felt violated because you were being scoped or inspected in this place where you had a reasonable expectation of privacy, your own fucking apartment.
Yeah. And that's part of the thrill for him.
Right. The violation is intrinsic to this kind of voyeurism, to this kind of thrill. You know, if you are a voyeur and you get off on watching people who are disrobing or having sex, there are swingers clubs for you out there. There are sex parties and sex clubs and crazy dance parties where you will see plenty of that by people who are doing that knowing that they're going to be checked out and are going to be looked at. It's part of the thrill for them. But if what your boyfriend is into is the upskirt photography or the spying on women in places and at times where they don't expect to be spied on or viewed or scoped, it's the violation that turns him on.
Right. Is there a way that we can think about this the way that we think about pedophiles, right? Like somebody who's saddled with an unethical desire.
Something that cannot be realized.
Or must not be realized.
Right.
So then, you know, if you want to stick with this guy, like your job is to help him to figure out a way for him to scratch that itch without actually invading somebody's
privacy. To channel this in a consensual, to dig a channel that he can pour his desires into that just funnels it all off into a consensual, not just direction, but a consensual consenting place. And what would that look like?
Can you go to a space? Can you scope out spaces where you can go and take your clothes off and he can be watching and you can pretend it's role playing and pretend that he's not there? Would that do it for him?
Mm-hmm. Probably not.
Probably not.
It sounds like this guy wants to see lots of other women.
Yeah.
And women he doesn't know. And women who don't know that he's watching them. And women that don't know that he now possesses, in these videos, kind of a piece of them and controls it and has this power over them because he possesses these videos that you made for him, if you are stupid enough to make these videos and commit these crimes on his behalf. And he can always then, and you don't know how much darker his desires get or his interests get. What if these videos that you created for him to help him scratch his itch, because he's such a pathetic, needy person, he needs help from you scratching this. What if he starts uploading them to the internet, these videos that you made? And it's not just about seeing women, but also about exposing women to others who would like to see them at these times and in these places where the viewing of them and certainly the creation of this video is a violation of their privacy and their selves and their bodies and their autonomy around choosing when and who gets to see me like this, disrobed, which is what people do in locker rooms.
And think of your future self. If you're an accomplice to this guy and then later on you inevitably break up with him, you get to think back upon your life and think about that you did that.
And he has that to hold over your head.
You don't want to do that.
What if he, all unbeknownst to you, is uploading these videos to the internet, has a revenge porny kind of website, and gets fucking arrested, and then implicates you? You, who were so nice to help him scratch this innocent little itch, wind up charged with revenge porn.
You are going to jail.
You are going to jail!
We took you to the worst place.
Well, you'll have no privacy.
You can have compassion for him, but you must not be an accomplice.
And when he says, this is an itch he needs to scratch, the response is, how can you scratch this itch ethically, which requires consensuality? It has to be consensual. And what you're asking me to do is to violate other people, to videotape them for you without their consent, and that I am unwilling to do. And if you ask again, I will break the fuck up with you.
And you can be a force for good. Like if you can actually find a way for him to be happy without violating people, then you will have made, you'll have repaired the world. You'll have made the world a better place.
Fewer violated people in the world, thanks to you. So my husband is out of town and I had to make dinner for myself and a friend. And I did it. I did it. I cooked an edible meal thanks to Blue Apron. It was all there. It was all in the fridge. It was all labeled. There was an instruction card. I just had to follow the directions. And I'm someone who needs directions to make toast. The fact that Blue Apron can lay out directions for me that allowed me to make a really delicious dinner, an impressive dinner for a friend, that is a miracle that comes to our house every other week in a box, a Blue Apron box. If you, like me, are kitchen phobic and you have triggering issues around cooking and chopping and boiling and sauteing and mincing garlic, never had any problems with any other kind of mincing. It's the mincing of garlic specifically that unnerves me. Blue Apron is for you. It is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. They make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-proportioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Choose from a variety of new recipes each week or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Terry and I are choosing vegetarian options every other week now so that we can decrease the amount of meat we're eating and be a little nicer to the environment. And the recipes for vegetarian options are, and I say this as a committed carnivore, just as delicious and filling as the meat-based recipes are. Also, recipes are not repeated within a year, so you will never get bored. Customize your recipes each week based on your preferences. Blue Apron also has several delivery options, so you can choose what fits your needs. And there is no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Here are a couple of items on the menu coming up. Sweet and spicy beef with jasmine rice and crispy shallot, and coconut rice bowls and sunny side up eggs with corn and Islander pepper. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/savage. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home cooked meals with Blue Apron. So do not wait. That's blueapron.com/savage. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 30-something bi female. A female friend and I were both kind of in like monogamish, cuckoldish kind of relationships. And we were talking today and we realized that the one thing that bugs both of us about it is that it seems like our guys always have sort of like a script that they want us to follow. Like, you're going to fuck that guy, he's going to do this to you, then you're going to do that to him, et cetera, et cetera. Which is totally hot to talk about. But to both of us, it almost feels like a scripted porno, or like basically the opposite of spontaneous. You know, it kind of makes us feel like prostitutes, that we're supposed to go in and do exactly this, and it's kind of about what they want. Almost like about control. And I mean, I'm all for a bit of BDSM play and control and that kind of thing too, but here's my question. Is this part of the cuckolding fetish? Sort of when we're sent out to play, like, but we have to adhere to this script. Is this unhealthy and kind of controlling, or should we just calm our tits and go with it? Anyway, we'd love to know your thoughts. Thanks.
In regular old BDSM, people talk about the pushy bottom, the person who is being submissive but is kind of subtly barking orders at the top, letting them know exactly what they want to do, when they want to do it, how they want it done to them. And those pushy bottoms get very annoyed or upset if the top doesn't follow their script to the letter. The same thing plays out. You see the same kind of pushy bottoms in cuckolding. The cuckold, theoretically in a cuckold relationship, is the powerless one, is the one being cheated on, is the one being degraded and humiliated. But invariably, the person that gets a couple into cuckolding is the cuckold. It is their idea. They have fantasies, very often specific, detailed, annotated, footnoted fantasies about what these scenarios are going to look like and why they turn them on. And they have masturbated about these things for years and years and years and created in their imaginations these erotic scripts. And then when they finally have a partner who's interested in cuckolding too, or becomes interested in it over time, which is usually the trajectory. Guy says to his wife or his girlfriend that he is cuckolding is something that he wants to explore, and she says no and shuts it down, but a seed is planted, and a few years later they revisit it, and then you have a cuckold couple. Anyway, the cuckold, the bottom in this, they've been thinking about it for a very long time. They have, like you said, a script, and often the bottom can be the controlling one in that relationship. And we like to say in BDSM land that the bottom is in charge. The bottom can withdraw their consent and the scene ends. But at some point in a cuckold relationship, the cuckold has to empower their partner to have sex the way they would like to have sex with other people if they're going to do this for their entertainment. I think what you say to your boyfriends or husbands is your cuckold fantasies and your scripts, really hot, really fun to talk about while we're fucking, really great material. And it gives me a lot of ideas. But when I'm with someone, I have to respond in the moment to what is happening. That there has to be room for me to deviate from your script. I'm not going to be able to necessarily hit these marks. Like, if you have this specific fantasy about me getting with this guy and blowing him, what if I get with this guy and he doesn't like blowjobs, or I don't like the way his crotch smells? I'm not going to go and do that just because it was in your script. I'm going to pivot. I'm going to improvise. I'm going to do something else. And we may get carried away. And you have to allow me with this other person to enjoy this other person, not just be hitting marks for you. And that's where the submission comes in. That's where the degradation or cuckolding or humiliation comes in. That's where it gets a little real. And that can be scary for a sub or a bottom in any sort of power exchange relationship, because they are ceding control. That's the bungee jump aspect of it. And people have an easier time ceding control and doing that bungee jump and not wanting to script every moment of a scene when they're with somebody that they love and trust, someone who's hit the marks for them in the past. When we talk about baby steps with kink, what we're talking about is kind of writing a script. We're going to do this, this, and this, and nothing but this, this, and this, and we're going to demonstrate to each other that we can be trusted, that we're safe doing these things. And the more you do that, the more you demonstrate to each other you're safe, the looser people get about those scripts. And then people begin to improvise a bit because they know each other well enough to know what works and what's a turn on. If you've been with these guys long enough to know what works for them, and you've baby-stepped your way through some cuckolding scenes with others that worked for everybody, you know kind of what works. And if you've fantasized aloud often enough, you know what turns them on. So you can go off script. Tell them you're going to potentially go off script, but you're going to go on to some other aspect of some other script that you've heard come out of their mouth at some other times. Or you're going to help them write a new script because you have agency here, because you aren't a puppet. Because he's not an animator drawing his fantasy on a piece of paper. He's living this fantasy with someone else, with you and these other guys. And your feelings and your desires and your needs and your scripts have to come into play as well. So it's fine for them to have these scripts. It's fine for them to have these specific annotated, footnoted fantasies that they share with you. And it's understandable that giving up control is scary, and people often want to be in control of the process of giving up control, which is a paradox, but there it is. But at a certain point, he has to trust you. He has to empower you to be the girlfriend or the wife that's the right one for him, who's a little freer than he is. And you should tell him you will take his scripts to heart, but you will have to have the freedom to improvise on and around them.
Hi, Dan. I have a bit of a funny question, I suppose. So my sister is coming to visit me. She is coming for about a week and a half, and she called ahead of time and was really concerned that she would take my bed and I'd have to sleep on the couch. And she was like, I could send you an air mattress in the mail and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no way, I'm letting you have my bed, because that's kind of the way it goes for me. I don't really care about that kind of thing. But funnily enough, I've been hooking up with my neighbor really recently, and it would be just as easy for me to go over to his house and sleep over. Not like that would be necessarily a problem, but he is older than me. He's 46, I'm 30. And in the past, when my sister, like when I was 20, I was dating a guy who was 40, and I told her, and she flipped out. She was like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy, blah, 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 like, who would do that? Who would date a younger girl like this? And then, But at this point, I don't think that would still stand, because I'm have my own place. I'm 30. I've been an adult for a while. I can make my own decisions. I'm not necessarily going to take or heed her warning if she says, like, he's too old for you. But I think what I'm asking or wondering is, do I just kind of like suck it up for the week and sleep on the couch because I was going to anyways? Or do I just say, hey, listen, like, I'm hanging out with my neighbor and you meeting him anyways because we're all friends around the neighborhood. We're probably going to have dinners together and stuff like this. And just be like, it'd just be easy enough for me to go over to his house. Like, do I even bring up that subject? Or I don't know. Maybe this is a really dumb question. Maybe I'm just like being really insecure about it. But she kind of affected me when I was younger, so I think that's probably why I'm still like kind of nervous about it. So, yeah, what do you think?
Stop being afraid of your fucking sister. You're 30 years old. You're dating someone 15, 16 years older. You're dating someone who's 46. That age difference at 30 is not as significant. If when you were 16 years old, you were dating someone who was 30, if you've always been into older men, it's understandable why your sister might have concerns and why she might have expressed them. And if she was young herself, maybe she expressed them inelegantly and left you feeling shamed. But now you're 30 years old, you're a capable adult, and there is a pattern in your life. You then were attracted to older men, you were still attracted to older men. And now you're not some vulnerable 16-year-old teenager who may be being exploited by someone taking advantage of your naivete and inexperience. You're a 30-year-old woman who's got her own apartment and got her shit together. And if you're fucking someone who's 46 and your sister still has a problem with that or shames you about it, then tell your sister to go fuck herself. But I don't think your sister, unless she's crazy and shamey, is going to do that. There's a good reason why. If your little sister is dating someone who's much older than she is, you might feel obligated to intervene, to at least say something and be motivated by concern. And you're not going to feel that same concern for your adult sister when she's dating another adult who's 15 years older than she is, which doesn't make a shitload of difference when you're talking about 30 and 45 as opposed to when you're talking about 15 and 30, when it does make a big difference. So go sleep with your neighbor that you're having sex with. Tell your sister that you're going to crash across the street at your fuck buddy's apartment. And if she has a problem with that, then she can get a fucking hotel.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to episode 561 and the caller with the borderline sister. I keep hearing you say that there's nothing he can do, there's nothing he can do, but there actually is something he can do. And the onus is entirely on him as the person, as the member of the couple with the toxic family member. It's entirely up to him to protect himself and his wife and everyone else from the toxic person. He's the one who's brought the toxic person into the relationship, so it's his job to take the toxic person out and not bother his wife, not mess with his marriage. So what he can do, what he should do, is go no contact with his sister, put up that firm boundary, and then work with his wife to repair the damage that his sister has done, because it's his family, so he should do something, and there is something that he can do.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling with a comment on episode 561 for the woman who was in an open relationship and talking to a guy who was a former cop who was violent against a man in handcuffs. I hope it's not too late, but I want her to know that you don't owe him an explanation. You absolutely do not want to risk retribution or any violence against yourself, especially with an ex-cop who has a lot of cop friends, probably, who can easily find you. You don't owe it to him. Fuck this guy. He's probably gone through this before. He can read between the lines of why you stopped talking to him. If he doesn't care, if he doesn't want to know why, fuck him. Not your problem. Don't risk violence against yourself or this guy getting pissed. Women have to deal with this all the time, and it's just not worth it. Not your responsibility. Good luck.
Hi, this is a comment. I'm calling about the father in episode 561 whose 10-year-old son had come out as gay. And I just wanted to say that it's a blessing to have a gay person in your family. I'm straight, and I have an identical twin sister who's gay. And the fact that she's not another hetero in our family has added to my life and actually my brother's and my parents' lives so much. And I actually feel honored to be the identical twin of a lesbian, because now it makes me see really clearly that my straight white WASP privilege and question it. And it also opened up my mind in terms of what relationships could be. See, my sister inspired me to question my typical heterosexual habit of assuming that monogamy is the only way to go, because she crafted her love relationships from scratch. She decided with her partners what parameters they would abide by in terms of fidelity instead of just blindly following what society expects like I did. So, Dad, you are so lucky to have a gay son if that indeed is what he turns out to be. You will find that your world will open up and your heart will become even bigger.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. 302-2064. A quick reminder, we are sending ITMFA lapel pins, impeach the motherfucker already lapel pins, to every member of Congress, every House rep, every senator. If you'd like to send ITMFA lapel pins to your congressman or your senators and give them the message that you want that motherfucker impeached already, go to itmfa.org or impeachthemotherfuckeralready.com. Click on the link, send a note to your representative and your senators, send them a couple of pins, send them a message, and help us raise money for Planned Parenthood, the International Refugee Assistance Project, and the American Civil Liberties Union in the process. itmfa.org. Be sure to read Savage Love, my weekly advice column in the Philadelphia Weekly and other newspapers all around the world. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow our guest, Molina Williams, on Twitter at Molina. The Savage Love cast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Love cast. Let's download.